Good afternoon. It's good to see all of you. It's a privilege for my wife and myself to be here with the Portland congregation today. I was going to thank Mr. Pennelly for giving me the opportunity to speak, but maybe when he gets here, he should thank me for being here to speak. I know the frustration of being stuck in traffic where we live in the Pittsburgh area. It's well known for its traffic problems. And the circuit that we travel each Sabbath between Pittsburgh and Wheeling is about an hour and a half between the two congregations, drive time. And when we, if there's ever any major accident or construction along the way, it really adds to a lot of difficulty. So, Mr. Pennelly, I just started. Would you like to give the announcements, or do you want me to go ahead and continue? Okay. So again, we're glad that we can be here with you. Portland actually is my hometown. I don't know many of you, but my parents began attending the Radio Church of God in Portland in 1958. And so I was 8 years old when they dragged me along to my first Sabbath service. Had no idea what I was getting into, except I did not like it. The services back in those days were plenty long, 2.5 hours usually at least. It took me a while to become accustomed to being a church kid, but certainly that was one of the greatest blessings of my life, was that my parents were called when I was so young, and so I had the privilege of virtually growing up in the church. In 1968, I left the Portland area, went down to Ambassador College in Pasadena, and then after graduating from college, I worked on campus for about 4 years after that, and in the meantime, I also was married to my beautiful young bride, Rani. In 1976, having not being employed any longer there at the church, we moved back up to the Portland area. Lived here for another 10 years. In 1986, while we were attending the Portland West congregation, I was hired into the ministry, and that began our travels around the United States. We served first of all in the Salem and Albany area for 4 years, and then started moving east. We were in West Tennessee for a year, then up to Canton, Ohio. And finally, in 1996, after surviving the church crisis in 95, we were transferred. I was working then for the United Church of God, and we moved to Pittsburgh. We've been there ever since. Had no idea when we moved to Pittsburgh we would be there for so long. It's been, in July, it'll be 20 years since we moved into that church area. So it's become a second home to us. We feel very comfortable in the area, especially since our children and grandchildren are right there. Our son and his wife live about 4 hours to our east. Our daughter and her family live about 5 hours to our west. So we're right between them, close enough to visit fairly often, and close enough for them to all come to our house from time to time as well. We're right there between them. So it's a nice arrangement for us. We do appreciate that. And again, because our children are settled there and our grandchildren are there, that's a second home, although I do still consider the Portland area to be my hometown. We actually lived not far from right here when I was in grade school. We lived in the Selwood neighborhood in Portland. And then when I was in junior high school, we lived in Milwaukee. I went to Milwaukee Junior High School and then a year at Milwaukee High. So it's not recognizable to what it was. A lot has changed in 30 years. A lot of you have changed in 30 years. Not me. I'm still thin and young and have lots of hair. So I've managed to fight off the years. But they do pass. They add up very quickly. A few of you may remember my parents. My father died in February of 2010, and mom still is with us. She lives in Vancouver, Washington, in an adult care home. She's been dealing with Alzheimer's now for the last several years. So she's not really able to continue attending church. But, you know, a lot of our friends in the Pittsburgh and Wheeling area who know her, have met her over the years, have continued to pray for her. And I see God's blessing in her life. Even though she is progressing, the disease is progressing, she's happy. She's comfortable. She's settled. She's accepted her living situation. She's no longer able to live in her home, but she's able she's comfortable where she is. And I believe that God is answering the prayers of those who are praying for her. And she's not, frankly, in a position to be able to pray for herself that much, but others are. And I believe God's Spirit is still within her, and He's still guiding her and caring for her, which is a very important thing to me, and I'm sure it's important to God as well. So we're very pleased to be here. The primary reason for our visit is to spend some time with her. We've spent a few days with her last week and have a couple more days ahead before we have to leave. But it's been a very satisfying and in many ways very pleasant visit. And this certainly adds to it, the opportunity we have to be here with you. I really like this room. This is a nice facility. Very comfortable, very pleasant. You've got your own hot tub. It's great. It's been nice, especially nice on for socials. Huh? You know, when you travel, it always takes a little bit of time to adjust to where you arrive, especially for us adjusting to the time change, even though it's only 3 hours between the Eastern time zone and the Pacific time zone. It still makes a difference. It has an impact. It does affect our sleep for the first few nights, settling into the new time zone and getting adjusted to rising and going to bed when the clock tells you to instead of when your body wants to. Sleep, of course, is a major block of time in our lives every day, something that we at least are supposed to do more than anything else in life, except possibly work or school. But the truth is, few of us really get as much sleep as we should. In fact, sometimes, and maybe a lot of times, it seems like life is so busy that sleep is a waste of time. We wish we didn't have to take the time for it. But in fact, sleep is often the very best use of our time, because when we get that sleep as we need it, we're more productive and more able to deal and cope with the rest of our responsibilities. There have been thousands of studies about sleep. Most of them are focused on dealing with sleep problems. But you know, for all the studies that have been done, experts still do not agree on why we sleep. The best answer to that question, or question, why do we sleep, is that we sleep because we get sleepy. After you've been up and around for a period of time, you need to lie down and sleep. But there's no real definitive scientific reason for that, except that we get tired and we get sleepy. The dictionary defines sleep as a natural period of rest. I love the way dictionaries phrase things. They take the simplest word and make it so precise, so difficult. Sleep is a natural periodic state of rest during which consciousness of the world is suspended. When you get tired, there's nothing more refreshing and more important, more helpful to you than a good night of comfortable, restful sleep. But when we're asleep, although our bodies are in a restful state, our minds, our brains, are still very active. One theory is that as you sleep, your brain is processing the day's events, sorting out what's happened, deciding what to remember and where to store it, or in my case, where to misplace it. And sometimes while you're sleeping, your mind or your brain is even working through some of the concerns you've had, the troubles you've dealt with during the day. It's probably not an unusual for you as it is for me to wake up in the morning and suddenly what I was worried about or thinking about the day before becomes clear and I have an idea for how to deal with something. So there's truth to that cliche that when you have a major decision to make, you should take time to sleep on it. There are a lot of reasons why people have difficulty sleeping. The major causes are health and stress. And those two together really make it difficult sometimes to get the sleep that we need. One estimate is that because of our daily schedules, only about 1/4 of adults get 8 hours of sleep on weeknights. I have to admit, 8 hours of sleep to me would be a luxury. But most of us don't get as much sleep as we would like, or maybe as we need. By the end of the week, we're pretty worn out, and even though it may not be technically possible to do so, we try to catch up on our sleep on the weekends, which is why most of our members prefer an afternoon Sabbath service. Not only do you get to sleep in the morning, but you get to come in the afternoon and take another little nap. In May 2007, a man named Tony Wright set the current world record for staying awake. He used a webcam to document what he was doing, document that he really was awake, and he remained awake for 266 hours. That's slightly more than 11 days. Don't ask me why, but that's what he did. During that period of time, he lived on carrot juice, bananas, pineapple, avocados, nuts, and water. Maybe that's the diet we should be on if we want to be more alert. So whenever he decided to quit, and I'm not sure why he did, it's said that he came out of the room, he was seen fully awake and alert. He sat down to do a TV interview and promptly fell asleep. Sleep is a major part of our life, but it, in some ways, remains a mystery. But one thing is clear. As physical beings, God created us with the need for a natural, periodic state of rest. Let's consider a couple of passages that speak of sleep. Let's look at Psalm 3, the third psalm. This is one of the Psalms of David, and it says in the title here that he composed this psalm when he was fleeing from his son Absalom. David dealt with many crises in his life, and this was one of the most serious, a threat to his life and to his rule as the king of Israel, and it was a very stressful time for him. In verse 1, it says, "Lord, how they have increased who trouble me. Many are they who rise up against me. Many are they who say of me, there is no help for him in God." Now, we don't have people chasing us down, trying to kill us. We don't have enemies in the sense that David literally did, those who were trying to not only oppose him and his rulership, but also even to take his life. And However, we deal with a different kind of enemy, different kinds of difficulties and stress. When I read David's Psalms and I see him speaking of those who were pursuing him in this way, I compare that to just the series of anxieties and difficulties and problems that seem sometimes to flood into our lives. A different kind of enemy, but this still nevertheless very difficult for us to deal with, and that are very potentially harmful to us. And so we can relate, not to exactly what was happening to him, but to this sense that life is often very troubled and difficult. And there doesn't seem necessarily to be any answer or any help or any way out of the problems we're in. There's no help. Sometimes we do feel just helpless. But in this situation, David says in verse 3, "You, O Lord, are a shield for me, my glory and the one who lifts my head." David found comfort in God in those extremely difficult times. "I cried to the Lord with my voice, and he heard me from his holy hill." Verse 5, "I lay down and slept. I awoke, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people." In the midst of this incredibly serious trial, with all that was happening around him, all the anxiety that he felt, all the concern and fear that he was experiencing, he says, I lay down and slept. You know, sometimes in the midst of our trials and difficulties, that's what we need the most, is just a good night of sleep. And to recognize, as David did, that he was able to put those aside and get the sleep that he needed so badly because he put his trust in God. A good night of sleep is a blessing from God. It's not just a necessary thing or some inexplicable mystery of a cycle. It is something that God has blessed us with. Now, most of us can't just turn our brain off and go to sleep if we're troubled. Sometimes we have those concerns that cause us to feel deep anxiety. But from David's experience, we can see that God will literally bless us with the peace of mind that we need so that we can get the sleep that can be so important to us. So in this, we see the importance of exercising faith and controlling our anxiety. Oftentimes, our minds just race off, and we find ourselves thinking or focusing on something that we don't really need to or want to. It does no good. It's a waste of energy and time, but it's so much of a concern that we feel overwhelmed. So that we have a hand, certainly, to play in it, to control our thoughts, to control our anxiety, to put our situation into God's hands, and to seek that rest in sleep. Remember that Jesus said in Matthew 6 that it does no good to worry about our physical needs. It doesn't do a bit of good to worry about those things, because worrying is not going to change what's happening. But if we seek God's righteousness and His kingdom first, then He'll provide for what we need. And sleep is one of those things that God blesses us with and that we truly need. Psalm 4, verse 6. Just the next psalm. Also a psalm of David. We'll drop down to verse 6. Again, we can relate what David is saying to the circumstances that we deal with, where we just feel overwhelmed with various kinds of trials and difficulties and challenges. It says in verse 6, there are many who say, who will show us any good? A lot of times in life, it just seems so difficult. We think, how could any good possibly come of this? David continues, Lord, lift up the light of your countenance upon us. You've put gladness in my heart more than in the season that their wine and grain are increased. I will both lie down in peace and sleep. For you alone, O Lord, make me to dwell in safety. So again, we see that when we truly put ourselves and our situation, our circumstances into God's hands, and take control of the anxiety and the fears and the concerns that we have, that God will bless us with that peace and with that sleep that is such a restorative part of our lives. It's also interesting to note in Psalm 121, we put our trust in God, we pray to Him, we constantly seek His blessing and help in all of our situations. But notice what it says about God in Psalm 121. Verse 1, Psalm 121 says, I will lift up my eyes to the hills from whence, I will lift up my eyes to the hills. From whence comes my help? My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. He will not allow your foot to be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. God doesn't have that period of time in his life where he's unconscious to what is happening in the world. He doesn't lose track of us, of our circumstances or our situation. He never misses a beat. He never slumbers or sleeps. Of course, he doesn't, in a physical sense, need it as we do. So as we get the sleep that we need, we put ourselves into God's hands, trust him and look to him, and he will provide us with the peace and the comfort so that we can get the rest that is important to us. But you know, sleep is more than just a periodic state of unconsciousness. There are a couple other major aspects of sleep that I'd like to consider a little bit this afternoon. First, just very briefly, we realize that sleep is this state of unconsciousness, and in as such, Scripture uses sleep as a metaphor for death. Sleep is used as a word that represents death. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15 that we will not all sleep, but we will be changed. In 1 Thessalonians 4, Paul writes that those who are sleeping in their graves will rise first to meet Jesus Christ. And Jesus said of Lazarus when he was in the grave, in the tomb, he said, Lazarus sleeps, meaning that Lazarus was dead. So that's a metaphor that we're very familiar with. In fact, it helps us to understand that there is no immortal soul, and that when a person has died, there is no consciousness. And we're aware of that scriptural use of sleep as a metaphor for death. But I want to spend most of the time this afternoon focusing on a third way that we can consider sleep. And this is kind of something we should be aware of and be warned about, because it can be very serious. The word sleep is also, besides being a metaphor for death, and besides being the restful state that we all need hours of each day, sleep is also used to describe a state of mind or a condition of character. So here's another definition from the dictionary of sleep. It can mean to be careless, inattentive, or unconcerned, to not be vigilant, or to live thoughtlessly. When someone is not living up to their responsibilities, when someone is not performing in the way that they should in whatever level, whether it's in a personal way or on their job or whatever it might be, we might refer to them as being asleep at the wheel, not really focused on what they're supposed to be doing, as it says here, to be inattentive, unconcerned, to be thoughtless, is another use of the word sleep. Now, in Scripture, we find that sleep then has both a positive meaning and a negative connotation. As we saw in Psalms 3 and 4, restful sleep is a blessing that we have that can indicate a state of peace of mind that comes through faithfulness, a sense of security and safety, even in difficult times. But as a spiritual condition, sleep represents one who is lethargic, inattentive, or living thoughtlessly. One who is unaware or oblivious. So one of the challenges we have is to allow or to make sure that there is enough time in our lives daily for physical sleep so that we can stay mentally alert. And with that alertness, then, remain focused and attentive on spiritual matters, to be awake and alert spiritually. My point today, if I have one, is that physical sleep, while it is a blessing, is also a reminder that spiritual sleep is a very serious hazard. I think it's, I don't know if ironic is the right word, but certainly a concern and worrisome that Scripture warns that Christians at the end of the age will deal with spiritual lethargy. Now, I find that to be ironic or alarming, because you'd look around and you'd think that with all that's happening in the world today, that as the end of the age approaches, it would seem like we would naturally be more alert than at any time in the history of the church. I think we'd have to recognize that we're not absolutely certain that we are living in the days of the end of the age, but I think we also would all agree that if this ain't it, I don't know what it's going to be. We live in a world that is almost daily becoming more dangerous and more bizarre. There's never been a time when it's been more important for us as God's people, as those first fruits that we heard about in the sermonette, never more important time for us to be spiritually wide awake. Let's look at a few scriptures that remind us of the dangers of being spiritually asleep. Let's begin in Proverbs chapter 6. Proverbs, the 6th chapter. Proverbs chapter 6, and we'll read verses 9 and 10. It says, "How long will you slumber, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall your poverty come on you like a prowler, and your need like an armed man." Now, sleep is good, but sleep is good in balance. And sleep is good so long as it fulfills that physical need that we have. But like anything else, if we overdo it, then it can become something that's not so good for us. The way we sleep, or too much sleep, I should say, represents, in this case, being lazy. Laziness leads to poverty. So in other words, over time, laziness will rob a person of what he or she could accomplish in life. And you know, as life kind of passes by, as we pass through our lives, if we are letting opportunities get away, we've got to be careful because eventually it becomes too late. Eventually it's possible to spiritually oversleep and not be able to catch up or to accomplish what we know that we need to. We certainly don't want to live in poverty, but the spiritual lesson is clearly even more important. The kinds of situations that we can find ourselves in or miss out on by not being attentive to the responsibilities or the opportunities that we have. Proverbs 24, the 24th chapter of Proverbs, beginning in verse 30. It says, "I went by the field of a lazy man, and by the vineyard of the man who devoid of understanding." So right away we see here laziness is put on the same level or on a par with or a descriptive of one who lacks understanding, not being aware of what's important and taking the actions that are necessary. Verse 31, "And there it was, all overgrown with thorns, its surface covered with nettles, its stone wall broken down. When I saw it, I looked and considered well. I learned a lesson. I looked on it and received instruction." So it's an analogy or maybe a metaphor again of a field or a vineyard of one that belonged to a person. It could have been productive. It could have been very useful. It could have been something that could have made the man very well off and it provided wealth for him. But it was all overgrown, all covered with nettles or weeds. And it was not cared for. The wall was broken down. And so looking at it, he said, "I learned a lesson." Verse 33 is the lesson. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. So shall your poverty come like a prowler and your need like an unarmed man. Again, being robbed of potential and of opportunity by not being diligent. These two proverbs both describe the outcome for a person who, in whose life sleep is out of balance, to the point where he is described as being lazy, as opposed to being industrious and productive. Back in Proverbs 6, I started in verse 9. If you go back to the verses before that, you'll find the familiar illustration of the ant and how the ant works diligently all summer long to prepare for winter. And so the parallel is very easy to see. It's a very obvious and clear lesson that is being drawn here. The warning about being physically lazy, then, is a spiritual message, as is emphasized here in verse 33. But if being physically lazy leads to disaster, how much more dangerous is it for one who is spiritually lazy? Now, I want to emphasize, too, as I speak about this subject in these general terms, I don't know that any of you are lazy. I'm not intending to imply that at all. But I think it's worthwhile to pause from time to time to remind ourselves of the importance of the diligence that we need to show. Again, Jesus said, and we quote it so often, that we seek, which means that we pursue, we go after, we devote ourselves entirely to God's righteousness and His kingdom. And that takes quite a lot of energy, focus, concentration, and effort. And by putting that effort into life, we'll be one whose vineyard, if we want to use that analogy or comparison again, is lush and productive and fruitful. That's the opportunity that each of us has. And the opportunity we have is to, we still have the time we need to begin or to continue to be productive by focusing ourselves on that lesson of not being spiritually inattentive or lazy or asleep. Let's look at a couple of statements where Paul speaks about sleep. Let's turn to Romans chapter 13. Romans, the 13th chapter. As we will look at a few verses here, we can just kind of think that, look back here in the previous chapters, Paul has given some very specific exhortation for how we should live as Christians. The relationships that we have with one another, the need to be to live according to the laws of the land that we live in, and to serve one another and to be the putting the energy we need into the kind of Christian life that we should live. But as we get into chapter 13 and move in through it, we see that Paul adds a sense of urgency, a reminder that we need to be busy doing the things that we ought to do, to be attentive to the way that we live, because it's not something that we dare approach in a manner that's anything less than fully diligent. We'll read verse 11. Romans 13, verse 11. And now do this, knowing the time, that it is now high time to awake out of sleep. For now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed. Now is no time to settle back. Now is no time to be anything but fully diligent. As we await the return of Jesus Christ, as I mentioned earlier, we suspect the times that we live in, but we aren't absolutely certain that this will be the age during which Jesus will return. But regardless, as Paul points out here, we need to remember that whenever the end of this age is going to occur, it's never been closer than it is today. Our salvation, the time that we are looking forward to, anticipating our receiving that gift of eternal life, is closer today than it's ever been before. And so Paul emphasizes that with that in mind, it's high time to awake, to not be asleep. He goes on in verse 12 to say, the night is far spent, the day is at hand. Therefore, let us cast off the works of darkness and let us put on the armor of light. Now, of course, the night represents this dark age in which we live. We need to remember that as we strap on that armor of God, that we are strapping on, as he puts it here, the armor of light. Now, of course, in Ephesians 6, he describes armor in different terms. But here, he just uses the one word to describe the armor, the protection that we have from the world that we live in, that we have the armor of light. Putting on that armor represents our awareness of the dangers and the hazards of the life in this age. And he's reminding us urgently not to go to sleep. Now, that's what's natural. It's natural to become weary. It's natural to become distracted. There are a lot of scriptures that remind us of that as well. Paul did not know when Jesus Christ was going to return. He didn't know when this age would be over. But we need to guard against, even though we don't know either, we need to guard against thinking that it's just going to continue on and on as it is. We're aware that the times we live in are important times to us. Living in the daytime, of course, means that we don't need to hide the way that we live. We live in the light of God's law, and that's a godly and appropriate way, and it's not something that we need in any way to try to hide or to mask, but we just simply live openly and diligently God's way. So he says, let us walk properly as in the day, not in revelry and drunkenness, or in lewdness and lust, or strife and envy. A couple of those couplets there, pairs of words, describe just the worldly way of life, revelry, drunkenness, lewdness, and lust. We obviously avoid the ways of society around us, but also not in strife or envy. And that's really maybe more of a family kind of a thing, a relationship that we have among ourselves, not to be experiencing or strife and envy in the way that we live together as a church family or in our personal families, but rather put on the Lord Jesus Christ, not making provision for the flesh or to fulfill its lusts. See, again, in order to accomplish that, we certainly need to be fully aware and awake and making conscious, careful choices. It would not be the result of a life that is oblivious or careless or thoughtless or spiritually asleep. 1 Thessalonians 5, Paul also talks about this. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. He acknowledges in verse 1, 1 Thessalonians 5, that concerning the times and seasons, brethren, you have no need that I should write to you, for you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night. Now we look at the times that we live in and we realize that events around us are somewhat ominous. Still, we need to recognize that the day of the Lord, or the time at the end of the age, we can say, is going to come as a thief in the night, or in a sense, unexpectedly, even though we recognize that those times are likely. It's still going to come as a surprise. It's going to come suddenly when it does happen. When people aren't looking for it is when it's going to occur, says in verse 3. When they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them as labor pains upon a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape. When these times occur, there's no escaping, just like a woman who's pregnant is not going to escape the labor pains of birth. So it's going to come suddenly when it does come, and so we need to be awake. Verse 4, your brethren are not in darkness, so that the day would come upon you as a thief. You're sons of the light, sons of the day. Therefore, verse 6, let us not sleep as others do, but let us watch and be sober. We know that light and dark represent God's way versus the ways of the world. We know that as the sons of the light, it means that we're living within the light of God's law, putting on that armor of light that he spoke of in Romans 13. So it's a description of the effort that we put in, that we put out, or that we make to stay awake spiritually. Obviously, the word watch, by the way, means to be attentive or to act. Literally means to not go to sleep. It literally means to be awake. But as good old Tony Wright proved, you got about 11 days if you're going to literally be awake constantly. So it's not talking about physical being awake physically without any interruption, but it's talking about our spiritual condition, not being spiritually lethargic or oblivious or thoughtless, but being aware and awake and focused. In that sense, we must never go to sleep. Again, by nature, people tend to focus on whatever's happening to them, on their circumstances, on their effort to find pleasure in their life. And people, by nature, are oblivious and unaware of greater needs. The normal pattern is to live in a way that is not aware of what's happening. To be among those who, well, verse 7 describes those who sleep at night. Those who are drunk at night. In other words, they have that spiritual inattentiveness, and they take advantage of the situation to just seek pleasure for themselves, rather than being aware or being awake or being vigilant. Being sober-minded means to exercise self-control, exercise restraint and moderation. Not the actions of one who is either asleep or spiritually or physically drunk. So Paul is very clear about our need to be vigilant, to be awake, to be watchful. Of course, sometimes we're not lazy because, or we're not unproductive because we're just plain lazy. Sometimes we just simply get worn down by life. Sometimes the burdens of life are just very, very heavy, very difficult, and we do become tired. We become tired physically from dealing with the stress and the difficulties we have in our lives. And that can make us then become discouraged, and we become less focused spiritually. Again, it was mentioned in the sermonette that the trials that we experience are intended to strengthen us, intended to build us up. Let's look at Hebrews 12, verse 12. You know, dealing with stress and trials is another subject from what we're talking about today. But at the same time, they can be exhausting. And so we need to realize that becoming spiritually lethargic can sometimes just be a matter of discouragement, not so much a matter of being lazy or not caring about the opportunities that are before us. So we're reminded that the purpose of the trials and the challenges we have are to strengthen us. Hebrews 12, verse 12. It's just following a description of the fact that as our Father, our loving Father, God will bring trials and difficulties to allow us to be strengthened by the chastening or the discipline or the struggles that we have. It results in the fruit of righteousness, it says in verse 11. So therefore, in verse 12, he says, strengthen the hands that hang down and the feeble knees. Don't be overwhelmed by exhaustion. Stand up straight, square your shoulders, and continue down the path, it says in verse 13, so that you will no longer be lame, but rather healed. When we feel overwhelmed and by difficulties and struggles, then it's good, again, to be reminded that the reason for that is to help us to move forward. and to help us to be, in a sense, refreshed spiritually, to recognize and to not be, to not, again, let the difficulties and the stress overwhelm us so that we become, we lose the focus that we're intended to have. There's really so much in Scripture about being awake and being alert and being vigilant and being watchful. Jesus used that example in parables that he gave that were part of the Olivet Prophecy. Let's take a look at Mark 13. When Jesus gave the Olivet Prophecy, you know, if you analyze the chapter, the disciples came to him and they asked him to describe or to tell them what would be the sign of the end of the age and of his return. And from that point on, for the next, I don't know, I didn't count exactly, maybe 12 or 14 verses, is where Jesus describes the events that will lead to his return. But then there are many more verses following that, all for the point of reminding us to be prepared for the time that lies ahead, to be awake to the events that are happening around us, and to be prepared for those events as they come, to not go to sleep spiritually. In Mark 12, we begin in verse 32. This is where Jesus gives a simple story emphasizing the importance of readiness, of being awake and prepared for his return. Verse 32 says, "The day of the day and the hour no one knows," that is, of his return, "not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father." And then he says, "Take heed and watch and pray, for you do not know when the time is." Here's what it's like. It's like a man going to a far country who leaves his house and gives authority to his servants to do their work, to care for the house. "Watch, therefore," verse 35, "for you do not know when the master of the house is coming. In the evening, at midnight, or at the crowing of the rooster in the morning, watch, because coming suddenly, he may find you sleeping." They didn't know when their master was going to return. But whenever he returned, they were to be ready. You know what? If the master returned in the middle of the night, they probably would be asleep. Again, we talked about physical sleep. We all need to sleep. But the problem is not whether they were asleep. The problem was, would they be prepared? So that when they're awakened when he returns, then they'd be ready to care for him, that the house would be in order, that the needs of the household would be met. They weren't sloppy in letting it go. They were ready for the time when Jesus would return. So they're told in verse 35, then to watch and be prepared to be, in that sense, to be awake at all times, because their master, Jesus Christ, our master, will return at a time when we don't know. We don't know exactly when it's going to happen. Luke 21, you know, Luke records this one statement that Jesus made that's part of the Olivet Prophecy that is not included in the other accounts of the Olivet Prophecy. It's a very meaningful one. Luke 21, verse 34. Again, this comes at the conclusion of the Olivet Prophecy. Verse 34, Jesus says, "Take heed to yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing, drunkenness, and the cares of this life, and that day come upon you unexpectedly." He says, be careful. Be awake. Life takes on its own rhythm and pattern, and struggles of life continue, and temptations are always there. We're always striving and working against the weaknesses that we have in order to be more obedient and to live the way we know we ought to. And it's easy to become distracted. So Jesus here is warning his disciples at the end of the age to not become spiritually lethargic. to not to be caught up in the temptations or the responsibilities of life, but rather to remain awake. Verse 36, watch and pray always. Be aware, be awake, be consistently spiritually alert. That's the lesson that Jesus Christ has given to us. And again, it's kind of ironic that at the end of the age, being unaware would be such a potential problem, because it's so important that we be constantly vigilant and awake. And the times that we live in are becoming more and more serious. I just referred to the parable of the 10 bridesmaids in Matthew 25. You're most likely very familiar with that, that five were prepared and five were not prepared. But it says they were all asleep. Well, they were asleep because when the groom came, it was the middle of the night. So again, it's not the problem wasn't that they were asleep. Sleep was the natural physical thing that they were, they needed to be asleep at that time of day. The problem was that only half of them were prepared for his return. They were asleep, half of them were asleep spiritually and not prepared. That's the warning that we find there. I want to just look at one other verse as we conclude. It's in Hebrews chapter 6. Hebrews, the sixth chapter. One more warning we see here about spiritual sleep or lethargy. If you go back a little bit earlier in this context, you see back at the end of chapter 5, there's a warning to those who have become dull of hearing. They weren't able to receive the information that the author here of this book had for them because they become dull of hearing. In other words, the Greek literally means that they had lazy ears. They weren't willing to listen. They weren't willing to receive. They were kind of tuning out what was being offered, or they weren't mature enough to be able to receive it. And so the warning is given that they need to move on from the basics that they've learned, as it begins in chapter 6, and to build on and move forward from what they've learned, and to not continue to be spiritually in that lazy condition. I want to drop down to verse 11. I'm sorry, let's start in verse 9. Hebrews 6, verse 9. He says, "Beloved, we're confident of better things concerning you." He just given them a warning that if they were to reject the calling that they have, that God would reject them. But just a very brief summary of what he says in the previous verses. But the point he's making in verse 9 is that, look, we're confident of better things of you. We're confident that you will do those things that accompany salvation, even though we're warning you of these other hazards. Verse 10, "God is not unjust to forget your work and your labor of love, which you've shown toward his name as you've ministered to the saints and continue to do so." And then verse 11, "We desire that each one of you show the same diligence to the full assurance of hope until the end, that you not become sluggish, but imitate those who through faith and patience inherit the promises." In the King James, it says that you not become slothful. I'm reading from the New King James. It says not to become sluggish. The Greek word actually would be translated slothful. Sloth is an interesting animal. A sloth, a three-toed sloth, lives in the trees in the jungles of Central America. And it's about the size of a chimpanzee. And it lives literally in the trees. And whenever it gets down onto the land, which it does only on rare occasions for its own personal needs, It's very, very slow and very vulnerable. Now, a sloth isn't necessarily lazy. A sloth is just slow. In fact, that's why it's called a sloth. They named it after, or the word sloth or slothful describes the apparent lack of movement of this creature. A sloth at full speed moves about 13 feet in a minute. It would take about 7 hours for a sloth to cover a mile. A sloth would complete a marathon in about a week. That's a pace that I probably could keep up with. Its metabolism is so slow that it sleeps 19 hours a day. And so, Paul, the writer here, of this author, uses that as a comparison. Don't be like a sloth. Don't be so slow to move forward or to respond. Don't be so unproductive as the sloth is in terms of its inability to move or to make any. It's a very good mental or physical image, representation of what we should not be like. So don't be slothful or sluggish, but instead we imitate those who through faith and patience are inheriting the promises. In other words, those who are diligent and those who are fully awake, those who are productive spiritually, those who are taking advantage of their opportunities, who live that in that draped in that armor of light, who are the sons of the day, not of the darkness. We follow those examples, and we see them all around us. I'm sure there are examples right here among the congregation of those who live that way and who are the positive example for others and encouraging to others to continue to live in that same way. Physically, sleep is something that we may not fully appreciate because we wish we didn't need to take the time for it, but obviously is essential. Chances are good by the time you get home tonight, you'll be ready for another good night of sleep. And it's important to us. It's a blessing that God has granted to us to help us be productive and healthy and active in our lives. But we should also be aware of the warnings of spiritual sleep, of being distracted, oblivious, or thoughtless, of being careless about the way that we live, but rather live very thoughtfully and very carefully. We have the opportunity then to care for ourselves spiritually by remaining mentally alert, diligent, and living our lives fully and carefully every day in hope and in faith, spiritually wide awake. Again, my wife and I are very thankful that we can be with you here this afternoon. It's good to see those of you that I remember and probably some of you that I should remember and others of you that we'll have a chance to meet that we haven't yet become acquainted with. So I thank Mr. Pennelly once again for the opportunity to be here with you and to give the message today. And we look forward to some time together following services.